This is the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5. Speak your mind. Speak your
mind. 26 minutes after 8, as I've been telling you all morning long, we continue with our discussions, 16 days of activism. And today, we'll take it to another sector. New gender-based violence policy guidelines for the health sector. Joining me in studio this morning, we have, let's welcome to our program, Dr. Caroline Allen, Consultant Project Manager for the Spotlight Initiative at PAHO WHO. Welcome to our studio.
Hello, good morning.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. And we have as well joining us Dr. Roma Bridgelal Nagesa, Manager, Medical Research and Audit, Directorate of Women's Health of the Ministry of Health. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning.
Nice to have both of you here with us this morning. Just the latest installment of a series that we've been having across the entire network. We're doing our part to educate people and sensitize them on some of these very, very important issues. Let's begin by getting to know you all a bit and some of your involvement in all that's going on. Let's start with Dr. Allen. Tell us a bit about yourself and your role and function in this major initiative.
Okay. Thank you. Well, the Spotlight Initiative is a global initiative to address violence against women and girls. It's a multi-sectoral initiative that's divided into several pillars. So the pillars being institution building, policy, prevention, services, and quality data. So at PAHO WHO, of course, we're really concerned about the health sector. And our activities are mainly concentrated under Pillar 4, which is about development of services for survivors of intimate partner violence and sexual violence. And we're also looking at strengthening data collection. So I'm involved in providing technical support and collaboration with the Ministry of Health to strengthen the response to survivors to make sure that they get the adequate care. So that's it in a nutshell.
And Dr. Bridgelal Nagesa, tell us about the ministry's role. Tell us about your role.
Okay, thank you very much. My role as the Manager of Medical Research and Audit is to coordinate the review and the technical review of the policy guidelines and also for the implementation of these guidelines and to facilitate training of all relevant healthcare workers at the regional health authorities and within the Ministry of Health.
Mm-hmm.
So my role is a collaborative one. I coordinate with the director of Women's Health, Dr. Adish Sujusingh, and through him, we collaborate with all agencies. So it's multi-sectoral. So there are different agencies such as the Spotlight Initiative and Pan American Health Organization. And then within the Ministry of Health, we have the Health Policy Planning Research Unit, and we collaborate with the regional health authorities, the various CEOs and the staff, for the implementation and training and the utilization of these guidelines. So it's a very broad, encompassing role in terms of coordination and implementation.
I've actually spoken to Dr. Sujusingh several times on the program. He's been with us speaking about women's health and in relation, we had the entire COVID discussion about pregnant mm-hmm. women. So we've spoken to him many times as well. Mm-hmm. This is important.
Yes.
Because the treatment offered to persons who've been through domestic violence and gender-based violence is as important to getting them back on the road to recovery as is any element of what's going on. What does this entail? Let's try to paint the picture for the listener. You have someone who has been through a traumatic incident and they end up at the medical facility, whichever it is. What is expected of the medical facility and what is a victim supposed to expect?
Right. So when the survivor approaches any one of our public sector workers, the public sector worker through these guidelines will be trained on, first of all, how to approach the survivor with empathy and to reassure them about confidentiality. And the healthcare worker, these guidelines are supposed to give them a framework in order to approach the survivor. It will guide them in their history taking all the investigations so that nothing will be left out and everything will be all-encompassing. And also for the referrals, remember the treatment of a survivor is a holistic one. It's not just therapeutic. It also encompasses the psychological and social support. So these guidelines also assist the healthcare worker and the public, the two very important stakeholders in the overall whole society treatment of a survivor of intimate partner violence. So the healthcare worker would be able to guide the survivor where resources are available, financial, and also resources through the FineCare TT website and all the other hotlines and services available. And through the guidelines, the healthcare worker would be able to provide follow-up as well, because there's a health record form that will assist the healthcare worker in order to document and to ensure that all the relevant referrals and follow-up and timely intervention is made. So this is how and why it is important to have these guidelines, and how the healthcare worker on approaching the survivor, they will be trained in all areas of delivery of care, of quality care for the survivor.
I know that the initiative is, there's a regional scope. We have other countries that are involved, and that data has been collected from the countries participating, and they paint us with a picture of what's the reality out there. And maybe we should tell people, when it comes to persons who are victims of gender-based violence, domestic violence, are these victims going to these health facilities, or are they shying away from them because there's an additional stigma or a fear of, if I go there, what am I going to face, and so on? What is the data saying to us?
Right. So, Dr. Allen, would you
like?
Yes. Okay, maybe I'll take this one. Yes, so in several countries around the world and regionally, they've conducted national women's health surveys. So the last one that took place in Trinidad and Tobago was published in 2018. And this actually showed that healthcare workers are the professionals that women most often report to when they've been subjected to intimate partner violence and sexual violence. But that is after family, friends. So, yes, and there are about 30% of women who've been subjected to violence who don't report to anybody. So, yes, it is a major concern that a lot of people are not reporting for any kind of service. So healthcare would be the first, and then there's also police and faith-based organisations that they would report to, but many people don't report. But part of what we believe will happen with the guidelines, if they're properly implemented and people learn to trust healthcare workers with things like confidentiality, with lack of stigma, with proper psychosocial support, is that people will be more willing to come forward. And with the provision of proper care and support, with referral to services, they will feel more safe and they will actually be more safe, because part of what we're training people to do is develop safety plans with the survivors and refer them to the appropriate services to keep them safe. So, yes, underreporting is a major issue. It's to do with societal attitudes, among other things. But if we provide safe and supportive care, we believe that that will start to reduce and more people will come forward.
I know that's a big, big hurdle. That's a huge problem that needs to be addressed. Because here at home, we have, I know, this job exposes you to a lot. And I know of so many cases where women are abused. And they keep that to themselves, to the point where they do not even let their closest friends or family members know for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And the stigma, the shame, they don't want anybody involved in the business and all these kinds of things. And that probably emboldens the attacker in many instances. To people who are listening into us and would need that little bit of encouragement, if they know someone or themselves are in a situation and are second-guessing themselves whether they should go for medical attention because then the police will get involved and the medical people do have a choice, they have to report it and all that kind of thing. What do you say to them?
Well, I would say to them that it is their right to to approach the healthcare worker with their situation, because the healthcare worker would be trained to know how to take care of them. And this is the whole point of these guidelines. We are training the healthcare provider first time in a holistic approach, comprehensive with a overarching framework to cover all areas to ensure that the quality of care is provided to the survivor, and that the survivor would get all the referrals needed and follow-up, and that the information that they provide is confidential.
Mm-hmm.
Unless if they would like it to be reported, it is, they have to give permission. So the healthcare worker would be trained to be empathetic and to express confidentiality. And so this is the first time that we will be given this comprehensive training, and it has already started with the Spotlight Initiative, and through the Pan American Health Organization. Healthcare workers have been trained, and there's a cadre of staff that already have received the training on the guidelines, and more training is expected to take place. In addition, we will be also training nurses and social workers and medical students before practicing on their interaction and how to deliver care to survivors. So we are trying to improve the training and the ability of the healthcare worker to provide that support and to give a holistic treatment, including psychosocial treatment for the survivor. So steps are being made to improve the quality of care. So I would say for the survivor that that to approach the healthcare worker, right?
We have, in this country, we have a real love-hate relationship with the public healthcare system. Yeah. Either have good stories or you have bad stories. And they're pronounced one way or the other. These guidelines that you're talking about, mm-hmm. what are they? What makes up these guidelines so that somebody listening into us would know, well, if I go to the health system and this is my problem, this is what I can expect?
Mm-hmm. Well, the guidelines, they encompass a format for the healthcare worker to provide the delivery of care in all areas. So there's the therapeutic treatment, there's the psychological screening, and there's also all the areas for referral, right, and for follow-up for the survivor. And these guidelines are available on the Ministry of Health website so that everyone can look and review the guidelines.
What was the UN's role in putting these guidelines together? Was
okay.
there a role?
Yes. So the UN, under the Spotlight Initiative, provided, first of all, financial support for the technical assistance that was needed, and the technical assistance itself. So we would have employed initially a consultant, Dr. Nala Lyons, to work with us to put together the first draft, which would have involved doing extensive consultations all across the country in each of the regional health authorities and with the Ministry of Health, through focus groups, through interviews. Also, review of national laws and policies, so laws such as the Domestic Violence Act, sexual violence legislation, policies like the National Sexual and Reproductive Health Policy, and then also looking at the World Health Organization and other UN agency guidelines, of which there are many evidence-based guidelines. So following the first draft of these, which was in 2021, since then we've been through many, many more reviews with agencies across the country to make sure that this is appropriate. We've worked particularly closely with the Director of Women's Health under Dr. Soju Singh's leadership, and also other ministries and the Office of the Prime Minister, to make sure that these are suitable. So really we've come with now evidence-based guidelines, thoroughly based in the local situation, but on global best practice. And I think it's important to note that part of this is a very much a values-based set of guidelines. So there's a whole section of them about principles of care, which are to do with human rights, women-centered care, and gender equality, so that people will feel comfortable that their human rights are being respected when they come to care. It's not just about the clinical aspects, such as post-exposure prophylaxis to make sure that you don't get HIV, etc. Those things are in there, but it's a rights-based approach that's very much supportive of the survivor.
These meetings and the information gathering and everything else that was done prior to putting together the guidelines,
right.
What did you find? When you speak to people, or you spoke to the healthcare professionals and probably victims and everything else, were there issues that they wanted addressed, that needed to be addressed, identified?
Well, there were a range of issues to do with just the system not necessarily being in place, and the follow-through and the referrals, etc., so that people were not necessarily getting access to all the care that they needed, even if individual... You know, sometimes there would be issues with individual healthcare workers, but it was also the fact that those healthcare workers didn't have a guiding framework to put people to follow through and... to make sure that, for example, that the individual survivor didn't have to repeat her story on multiple occasions to different providers. So one of the things that was recommended and which we put in place is a reporting system so that the information will be reported at one point and it will be shared on an appropriate basis with other providers so that they can really follow through on their care so that people don't fall through the cracks and they can receive the care that they need.
I know that... We've spoken about the issue of domestic violence and all of these things with various stakeholders. Police, we've had many discussions with them because we see very often prominent cases in front pages of the newspapers where you have very unfortunate incidents, women losing their lives. Mm-hmm. And these are women who did everything that they were told that they needed to do. That when these situations took place, they needed to go to the police, they needed to report it, they get their... restraining order, whatever it is they had to do, and yet still the system didn't work for them. What kind of assurances, checks and balances are we putting in place to ensure that these guidelines and all of these new procedures are followed, and that if they are not followed, there's a repercussion somewhere down the line so that the standards don't drop? Because that's a big deal. It's all well and good for us to sit here and pontificate about all that should be done. Mm-hmm. But if it's not being done, how do we treat with that? Do we have measures in place to treat with those?
Right, so thank you very much for that question. That is very important. And these guidelines, for the first time, there's a health record form for the healthcare worker to document the incident, the violence, and also to document the history, the investigation, the management, the treatment. And this health record form is paper-based, and now there's a new innovation where it is electronic, and it is part of the perinatal information system by the Pan American Health Organization, which has been in existence in the Americas for the past 40 years and in Trinidad and Tobago since 2018. Now we have an electronic version, which is part of the SIP Plus, which is the electronic perinatal information system. So the point I'm trying to make is that all of the record taken will assist in finding out the key areas that need that are priority areas that needs strategies for improvement, and it is a form of monitoring the guidelines and the implementation. It checks for timeliness of treatment to determine when they get, for example, their post-exposure prophylaxis for HIV. It also documents the referrals, the relevant referrals, and it also allows for follow-up for these for the survivor. So they will not be lost. Everything will be documented and is confidential. And in this way, we could assist the survivor better by providing this follow-up and to ensure that the timeliness is there and all the other indicators for quality treatment, and to monitor the healthcare worker in their provision of care, right? It is not just left for them to do it on their own. There's now a first time where the system can be audited by the use of these health record form.
How do we get over the cultural or societal challenges? That's a big part of it. Because we could have all the procedures in place, but if people aren't coming forward to use the facility, the procedures are just going to be there. And I don't know if there's any part of the program that targets that element of the discussion. We have people listening to us now, I'm positive, who saying to themselves, I am business, what will they say? I ain't going to no hospital. Because I just don't want that kind of exposure. I don't want that shame from a family to put us through that kind of thing. How are we going to deal with that?
I think through education, right?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're doing in the training is really spending quite a large proportion of the training is dealing with those same attitudes. We start with asking people, you know, to state whether certain sorts of values are true or force. You know, for example, that women are to blame if they go out at night in wearing certain things. Those kind of attitudes that are very deep-seated, we are trying to tackle those within the healthcare workers. Obviously, it's a society-wide thing. It has to be... So, as I say, our work that we're talking about today is focused on the healthcare workers, but as part of Spotlight, there's education going on in schools. There's also gender-responsive policing training. It's a process. It won't be done overnight. Having these guidelines is the start, and of course we have to work very closely with agencies in the health system to roll them out. So we'll be continuing our strong relationship that we have with the regional health authorities. We'll be doing further training of trainers. We've developed a sort of electronic tool so that people know how to use the form that we were talking about. We're beginning on that journey, but a lot is being done under Spotlight to try and work with the different agencies, and we're just one part of this multi-sectoral approach, which incidentally I think it's important to notice something that's definitely on the government of Trinidad and Tobago's agenda. The Prime Minister has set up a committee to deal with violence as a public health problem, and we're collaborating with the government, the Office of the Prime Minister as well, under Spotlight, to try and get stronger approaches to violence as a public health issue.
We need to take a couple of quick messages, but when we get back, we've got more of our discussion. Actually, on Freedom 106.5 FM, stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. It's just about 7 minutes before we wrap my time with you guys this morning. And this is probably where we should, as we wrap up our discussion this morning on this very, very important topic, leave people with some words of advice and some guidance. Words of advice, guidance, because, as I said, in situations like these, when people find themselves making the decision as to what to do next is of paramount importance. So what's the advice? And seeing that we have all these measures that we're putting in place with training staff and everything else, who wants to go first?
I think in the immediate term, thank you. There are some very good services in place that have been instituted quite recently. The domestic violence hotline. There is also a directory called Find Care TT, which focuses actually on mental health. It's been developed by the Mental Health Unit of the Ministry of Health in collaboration with PAHO and a number of other agencies. And that is available. You can just go to findcarett.com, I believe, and it's available online, and there are paper versions of that. And that really focuses on a range of mental health services and support. Under the Spotlight Initiative, also UNFPA has developed a directory of services for economic empowerment of women. So there are a number of resources out there. As I say, we're working closely with the regional health authorities now to really train and support them in rolling out these guidelines. So that's ongoing, but there are some immediate resources out there for survivors that are known to be high quality.
Yeah, Dr. Bishan Gisa.
Yeah. Thank you. So my message to the public is that if you are a survivor of intimate partner violence and sexual violence, that you should approach the healthcare worker, because they are being trained to cater to your needs, right? And they will be listening to you and trying to empower you to make decisions to improve your healthcare situation and to assist you in creating a safety plan and having follow-up. They will be trained in being confidential with your information. And these guidelines are there to assist you and to have an improved health response, an improved response from the healthcare worker. And we are trying our best at this time in order to provide that quality of care that you deserve. And you are a public good for Trinidad and Tobago, critical for family life and community life. And we hope on behalf of the Ministry of Health and Spotlight and Pan American Health Organization that for you to approach the healthcare worker with your concerns. Right? Thank you.
That's where we drop it. Ladies, thank you all so much for being with us here this morning. I know that this is very important to you, or you're very passionate about this. And I hope that whenever we have these interviews, that the information reaches someone who needs it. And that somebody takes what was said today as the reason that they take a decision that could very well take them out of a life or death situation in many instances. Thank you so much, Dr. Roma Bridgel-Nagesa and Dr. Caroline Allen, for being with us here this morning and for sharing the information. Thank you once again.
Thanks for the opportunity. Thank you.
Listen and stream the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.